Welcome to Tentpole Trauma, the podcast where we look at movies that came with hype and high hopes, but left with crushing disappointment, either critically, at the box office, or both. Freed from the weight of expectations, we seek to examine these underperformers under a new light, parsing through the good, the bad, and everything in between with the hopes of gaining a better understanding as to why they failed to find their audience. Warning, there will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie that we're discussing today, I suggest you stop the podcast and go watch it. Then when you come back and listen, you'll get more out of the discussion. On this episode, we discuss Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes. I'm Sebastian, and I'm here with Jennifer.
Hello.
We are talking more apes. Now, if you are a Patreon subscriber, you will know that we are discussing Planet of the Apes because the new Planet of the Apes movie, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, is soon to be opening, and I love me some apes, and I especially love them when they come from a planet. Now, as we've discussed in our Patreon episode, you also love the apes, don't you?
I love the apes.
Especially coming from an animal rights activist sort of place.
Yes, that would be a place that I'm coming from.
Now, you are a big fan, especially of the newer films, are you not?
Big time.
Yes, we have seen all of them together. And
as we will see, the newest film that's coming out very soon.
That's right. We will.
We'll be seeing that in the theater.
Very excited about it. But we're not here to talk about those movies.
No.
And we're not here to talk about the original movies.
No.
We are going to be talking about the 2001 Planet of the Apes by Tim Burton. And the reason we're talking about that one on Tentpole Trauma is because it is a trauma, for sure. Now, interestingly, it is not a financial failure. In fact, the movie did really well at the box office. However, it was so universally disliked and panned by critics that they did not start off a new franchise with it.
No, in fact, they waited, 10 or 11 years before bringing another Apes movie again?
10 years, yeah.
It was 2011, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so this film was so disliked.
Yep.
That even though financially it did well, they did not dare make another one.
Like, the writing was on the wall so clearly that they're like, yep, this made a ton of money, but nope, we're not making another one off of this series. Like, we will come back to this IP, but we're not going to go from this point. We're going to start fresh, take a whole new approach and not continue down this vein of storytelling. So that tells you something right there. When a movie makes money and they don't want to follow up on it, you know it had to be poorly, poorly received.
Yep. Tim Burton has a lot of magic. Not here.
Because I don't think we've actually talked too much about Tim Burton. We talked about, did we do the original Batman? We did.
We did.
Yes. So we have talked about him.
Yeah.
I am a fan, I would say, of Tim Burton. I certainly was a fan in the 90s and into the early 2000s. Before this movie, he did Sleepy Hollow, which is one of my favorites.
We both like Sleepy Hollow a lot.
Big fans of that movie. So I remember when this movie was coming out, I mean, I was pretty jazzed. I was like, oh, new Planet of the Apes and Tim Burton's directing. I was like on board. And I did see this in the theater. I remember because I was working at New Image, and I saw it with my friend Kelly Bray. And, you know, we were like, what the hell was that? I mean, I think this movie is impossible to walk out of without saying, what the hell was that? Like, even if the experience of the entire movie itself isn't like, I don't think this movie is that bad. And maybe you will disagree with me, and that's totally fine if you do. Like, I know this movie is largely indefensible, but the real thing that ruins the movie is the ending.
Oh, it's no, I actually do agree with you. I don't think it's that bad. I think there's some good things that happen in this film.
Yes.
It's the multiple twists at the end.
The final one being one of the most absolutely absurd head scratchers of all time.
Even I remembered that, and I don't think I saw this in the theater. I think when this came out, I was still a flight attendant, and this was not a movie I was going to seek out. I did not see this in the theater, but I did see it at some point because when we were getting to the end, I was like, I think I remember what happens here.
Well, you've probably seen it because I've had it on.
Maybe. It could be you. I don't know. But I mean, I already like, that's just the final twist, which I actually kind of appreciate the final twist because it's so ridiculous. But there's like two other twists leading up to that.
Yeah.
As well. And I was like, wait, is it? And I think I was getting them all pretty right.
Yeah, you were close. I mean, and it is definitely the sort of feeling of those. I think the first twist is actually good, but then the next one is like, huh? And then the last one is like, what? And so it's a progression of twists that gets more absurd as it goes. But we'll talk about those when we get to them. I also think one of the big things working against this movie is the casting of its lead, Mark Wahlberg. I don't think he's terrible in the movie. I just don't think the character is at all interesting. Like, he's just like Mark Wahlberg, like, but oh, he's scientist Mark Wahlberg. Oh, you're always asking for trouble
when there's a scientist Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, or a teacher or whatever. Like, it never goes well when you try to sell Mark Wahlberg as like an intellectual in any way.
If you'd like, go back through our catalog for a little temple trauma of a movie called The Happening.
Yeah. I mean, I can see their thinking because the reality of the role is he's not doing anything smart. He's just running around and they just wanted kind of an action guy because it's essentially an action guy role. But the problem is you're supposed to also buy him as a ape scientist or whatever on some sort of satellite or whatever. Let's talk a little bit about the setup of this movie. So they're on like a space station, right? Like off somewhere far into the stars, and they're like testing, they're putting chimps in this pod and like sending them into this like nebula or whatever for, I don't know, reasons. Did you get any sort of strong sense of why they're doing it?
Only that they're using the chimps because they're expendable. You know, at least like they sent, I'm going to say his name wrong again, Pericles?
Correct.
I got it right. I kept wanting to call him Hercules.
Yeah.
Because I like to go, Hercules. Sorry, I'll never stop. Pericles. At least they send him out there and it looks like he gets into trouble and somebody says, oh, should we send another chimp? And at least the captain's like, no, it's too dangerous. I was like, thanks, buddy. So we don't, like, there's a whole like cargo cages full of chimps that I'm like, you're just ready to send off into the black hole of space.
Yeah. I mean, the guy literally says like, he's the canary. That's the coal mine.
Yeah. I'm already on defense. So yeah, I don't like this mission at all.
I'm not even sure what the mission is.
I don't even know what it is, but yeah, whatever.
And I've seen this movie probably like 6 or 7 times.
There's no, you're not missing anything. It's just not there.
There's something about the movie, just the way it's paced or the way it's cut or something, where it's just, you really don't follow it very well. You know what I mean? Like this time I think I was following it better than I usually have, but like there's something about it that's just weirdly uncompelling, where you just, you're not really paying too much attention to why things are happening, honestly. Like, I don't understand what they're doing up there in space. I don't know what they're doing.
And I think that carries over throughout the film, and that goes into more of what we were talking about with Tim Burton in general.
Right. Like, it's pretty clear that Tim Burton is really not interested in things like
storytelling,
plots, you know, realistic characters. He's like a gag guy. He likes to set up funny gags, and like he likes to make things look really visually interesting. He likes characters that are sort of quirky and misfit like, but he's not strong on story.
He's not. And, you know, Sleepy Hollow works because Sleepy Hollow is an established story.
Yeah.
But this is kind of just a fever dream of what's going to happen as far as, it's a lot of like, oh, this looks cool, or this is whatever, and this happens, and I'm going to have a hard time talking through this.
Are you saying that because you want to give up?
Oh, no, I'm not giving up. No, I'm just saying in general, like it's, you know, as far as like if I have to talk about like plot and what happened here, it's very hard to track.
I mean, it should be said in Tim Burton's defense in this case, I don't think he was the real creative force behind this. I think he came onto this project late in the game. Like, this had been kicking around forever. They'd been intending to reboot the Planet of the Apes for like most of the 90s. You know, just a lot of things have happened. Sort of famously, you know, there was that Superman movie that Tim Burton was supposed to make that he didn't end up making. The different things that went wrong in that project. I mean, like Kevin Smith even has a story, you know, because he had worked on the Superman movie. Like he was making fun of this movie. And Tim Burton heard about it and got all pissed at him and stuff. They had a whole like weird falling out. But the bottom line is this was not Tim Burton's thing. He just ended up here kind of at the last minute and was like, all right, I'll do it. I kind of like the Planet of the Apes. You know, he didn't write the script. He didn't come up with this story. This feels like a movie that was just put through a million different drafts is what it feels like.
That's good.
But I think once Tim Burton got on set, he's like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if the apes did this? Wouldn't it be funny if the apes did that? And so he's going to prioritize that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that's why the movie feels kind of weirdly the way it is. You know, it's like it's trying to be kind of like a serious movie, but then like we get like ape like greasers or whatever, like playing basketball and shit, you know. And you know that's just because Tim Burton's like, wouldn't it be funny if, like, there's weird shit like that in it that makes this movie feel really odd tonally.
There's a lot of weird shit like that that happens throughout the entire film. But let us get back to Mark Wahlberg and how he arrives at the Planet of the Apes.
So he goes chasing after his monkey, as he calls him.
Which I was glad to see that he went after Pericles.
He's basically like, they're all like looking out at the view screen or whatever, wondering what to do. And like Mark Wahlberg's like, I'm going to go run a few more tests or whatever. And he's just like, doo, 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 doo. And then goes to the goes to the pod that's just like sitting there. And then just takes off in it to go after Pericles.
And they're like, wait, what's going on? And he's gone. And he goes into what Pericles went into, I guess, some like crazy storm that time travels. And
yeah, it's like a nebulous storm or something, some kind of particle cloud space thing that's purple. And he goes into it and like Pericles' pod disappears, right? He can't find it anymore. And then he ends up just crash landing on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
a planet occupied by apes. Ooh. Now, this movie wastes no time. Mm-mm. Like, there's not a lot of wandering around trying to figure shit out. Like, his pod goes into this, like, swamp.
Yep.
Which, I mean, another thing about this movie is it feels very much like sets. Like, even this swamp seems like a set. I'm almost positive it's inside and not outside. But it looks cool. I mean, you know, I like the sets. You know, he climbs out of his pod and his, you know, his spacesuit's now all kind of burned and ripped, so it looks cool.
Yeah.
And he just kind of starts wandering around, and then instantly, like, these humans go running by. Chris Christopherson,
yep,
as the leader of the humans. That's, I right. guess, and his daughter Estella Warren.
It was the time of Estella Warren.
Yeah, she's kind of in the Nova role, sort of. Another thing that, you know, I have to point out about this movie, which you were kind of, I think, struggling with at first.
I was.
Because you were like, well, is that Cornelius? Is that Zira? And it's like, no. It's like they didn't remake the movie, right? But they are using familiar elements from the movie. Like, I mean, the Mark Wahlberg character is kind of like Charlton Heston. And then we're going to meet a Helena Bonham Carter ape named Ari, who's kind of like Zira.
Right.
And there's different, like, iconography elements that show up. I mean, we get the scarecrows again, done Tim Burton style, and they look cool. So, you know, it's like they're repurposing the iconography of the movie, but just kind of using it in different ways, which I'm fine with.
No, I don't have a problem with it either once I got my head around it. And it was also because... You know, we had watched the original, so I just really had that all fresh in my mind, and I was like, oh, okay, this is so-and-so, this is so, no, it's not, they're different people, okay.
Yeah, but they are meant to evoke
them. They're like homages to the characters, and that's fine, and I think we should also say that a big difference is the humans on this planet can talk.
That just feels like, we don't want to bother with that story element. Which then begs the question of why the apes think they're superior. But, I mean, I think in this case, the apes are superior just because they can kick the shit out of the humans.
Well, and I think they have greater numbers as well. It seems like there's way more apes than there are humans.
Yeah, I don't think it's an intellectual superiority as much as it is just sheer, like, strength.
Strength and numbers.
Right. And if you think about it, if apes were as smart as we were, but they also had the physical capabilities that they do, they could probably subjugate us because they could kick our asses. And that brings me neatly to these new apes, which I am going to say I like. I think these apes kick ass. Like, yeah, it's a lot of wire work and stuff, but it's impressive. Like, this scene when they first attack, like, they're coming out of the trees. They're like, you know, they're doing all sorts of crazy jumps, and they're scary. And I really like the armor that he's got them in. They've got sort of a more, like, almost Roman-like armor. Like, this is where the Tim Burton aesthetic, I think, really kind of helps this movie. And, like, I think the way the apes are realized, even though we're still dealing with people in suits, I think is cool. Like, clearly they're acrobats and stuff like that involved, and they're way more ape-like. Like, their way they move is more ape-like. They attack in more ape-like ways. And the makeup, I think, is fucking awesome. I think the ape makeup is excellent.
I agree. And I, in fact, said that when we were watching the film. I was like, oh, the makeup is amazing. Like, I think it's great. And yeah, they're all over the place. So much that, as I told you this morning, it seeped over into my dream where I had, like, I don't remember the dream I had last night, but all I remember is that you and I were fighting something and you were like, just punch them. And I, like, punched whatever this was. It wasn't an ape. I don't even know who I hit, but I hit them like I was in Planet of the Apes, like I was one of the apes, and they just, like, went sailing off into space. And I was like, that's right, Planet Fitness.
Yep. Yeah, you're getting ape strength. Yeah, there's a lot of fighting in this movie. This movie is action heavy, and I just have to say that I enjoy what they do. They make a concerted effort to make the apes much more ape-like than they were in the original movies. Makeup effects are done by Rick Baker,
yep,
who's an ape enthusiast himself, and I think they're spectacular. I think, you know, all of the characters, we get some great actors here. We get Paul Giamatti as like the ape slave trader guy who's just a total scumbag.
He's such a sleazebag. Yeah. He's such like wheeling and dealing, just a little shuckster of an ape.
Yeah, he's like an orangutan, I believe. Yeah. We get Michael Clark Duncan,
yep,
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Sad we don't have him around anymore, as the Atar, the main kind of warrior gorilla.
Yep.
And we get Tim Roth,
oof,
as General Thade, who I think puts in a spectacular performance.
And this is a villain that is a villain's villain.
Yes.
This is no Dr. Zaius, like, yes, Dr. Zaius, I just am afraid of change, Dr. Zaius. General Thade is here to mess things up.
He hates humans. He's like a racist, basically. Yeah. And he's also like a horrifically violent chimp, and the way he moves and stuff is terrifying, I think. Like, and the makeup is spectacular. I'm a big fan.
This was when I asked you, I was like, I couldn't remember, it was Koba, right?
Koba,
I'm sorry, Koba, who's like the villain,
yes,
ape in the later films, and I felt like this was reminding me of Koba in that way.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, it's somebody who has been really, I don't know if he was hurt by humans in some way, or he just maybe, I mean, well, Koba was, but wasn't that Koba's story?
That was Koba's story, yeah. Koba's story was he was like a test ape that
he was
had
experimented
been
on, so he has every right to be angry.
Yes.
But I don't think that, I mean, that's not what happened to General Thade, but his dad is David Warner.
No. His dad is Charlton Heston.
Who was David Warner in this?
David Warner was Helena Bonham Carter's father.
That's right.
He's like a senator.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't blame you for getting this stuff mixed up.
I'm sorry, but
you haven't seen the movie six times.
Not yet. Not yet. I'm catching up. Yeah. So, you know, his dad was, then that was great too, because you were like, do you know who this is? And I'm like, he seems familiar. And I'm doing the math, though, and I'm like, I already thought that Charlton Heston had passed at this point. So I was like, it can't be Charlton Heston. You were like, mm-hmm. And then I knew. And then I saw the chompers.
Yeah.
And I knew. But, yeah, he's General Thade is just a very angry, angry ape.
They don't really spell out exactly why he hates humans. I think he just hates humans because he's a mean son of a bitch.
Well, like you said, he's I mean, there's people that are just racist, and it's just, you know, sort of speciesism, I guess it would be this way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, at one point, like, they're having this dinner. Mark Wahlberg has been like sold off as like a house slave or whatever, and he's like serving them this dinner. There's like the really great ape makeup on that actor, Glenn Shaddix, is like that like orangutan, mm-hmm, sort of rich,
yes,
guy or,
yes,
whatever.
Yeah, that has the trophy wife, Tim Burton's soon-to-be ex.
Yeah, Lisa Marie.
That's right.
And that dinner, like, Thade, like, grabs Mark Wahlberg's character and, like, pries open his mouth and is like, is there a soul in there? Because the Helena Bonham Carter character is talking about how she believes humans are like apes. They have souls, too. And let's talk a little bit about the Helena Bonham Carter character. As I told you, a little bit of inside baseball, Tim Burton was with Lisa Marie at the start of the filming of this movie, and then it was with Helena Bonham Carter by the end of it.
Oof.
So, yeah, I think there were some uncomfortable days on set with that going on. Also hilarious, considering that, like, both of them are in ape makeup the whole time. Like, so is Tim Burton, like, getting horny for apes?
I mean, hornier for one ape than the other.
I mean, and being horny for apes is definitely a theme in this movie.
Big time.
Because there's some sexual tension going on.
There's more sexual tension in this movie, way more than in the original. It's thick.
They're laying it on thick. Yeah. There's no shying away from it. And it's so weird, too. What's weird about it is they've set up the Estella Warren character so that you think that she's going to kind of be the Nova. And she is, like, hot for Mark Wahlberg and eyeing him the whole time. But then Mark Wahlberg and the Helena Bonham Carter ape are just kind of like getting close and sort of flirty and stuff. And then by the third act, they're like playing it off like there's like a love triangle. Yeah, and Estella Warren's clearly like getting jealous.
Glaring when he's like paying attention to Helena Bonham Carter. And same when he's talking to Estella Warren and we got like hurt feelings from Helena Bonham Carter ape.
Yeah.
Like she's just like looking like sadly over there and...
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
It's straight up in the movie.
Yeah.
What do you think of the Helena Bonham Carter Ari ape character?
Helena Bonham Carter can do no wrong
yeah.
in my eyes. I think she's a fine character. I think, you know, she's playing, you know, kind of a person that we've seen before where her dad, David Warner, is the senator and she's, you know, kind of a rebellious daughter, I guess, in the sense that she feels that or that humans should have more rights and, you know, that they have souls.
She's an activist.
Yes.
She's an activist.
Yes.
She's a very common type of character we see these days.
Yeah.
I mean, she's unlike Zira, who had activist qualities. She's just straight up an activist.
Right, because she's not a scientist yes. or anything else. This is what she does. But I mean, as far as like being that character where the dad is in like a position, you've seen it in many different times
yes.
where the dad could be running a business and the daughter could be just anti that or whatever. And this
yes.
just happens to be that the dad's in charge of the government and she's anti, you know, what the government stands for as far as how humans are treated.
Yeah. You know, and he's not really necessarily anti-human, but
no.
he can't, you know, his hands are tied. He
right.
can't do anything about it
exactly.
or whatever. Whereas Thade is more like hates humans. And of course, Thade has the hots for her.
Of course.
Like, I think it's implied that they had something kind of once, but she can't stand him because he hates humans so much.
Because he's also not a good time. Like, just in general, Thade is an unhappy ape.
He's definitely unhappy, but I sure do like to watch him when
oh,
he's
yeah.
on screen.
No, he's fascinating to watch. And Tim Roth is just bringing it.
He's bringing it. He's the reason why I can really enjoy this movie, even though it is really, really, really flawed. Like, I can enjoy this movie mostly because of him, because whenever he's online, and to some degree, Michael Clarke Duncan, he's really great in it, too. There's also there's actually the other gorilla character who's like, you know, sort of the ally character, because he's like one of the house apes who ends up going with them.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the actor's name. He's actually a Japanese actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's good too. I feel like all the ape performances are really strong.
Agreed.
If anything, I would say my one criticism of Helena Bonham Carter isn't her performance or her character, but just I don't think her makeup is quite as good. Like her muzzle seems a little rubbery. Maybe it's just because they focus so much on her, but like, I don't know. I always look at her nose and I'm like, I can tell that's rubber. You know, whereas in the other actors, I feel like it's more believable.
I didn't notice that her nose was rubber, but I just noticed more on her than other female apes in the original film or even in this film as well. She really has like a lot of facial hair.
Yeah.
She has more like kind of sideburns.
Well, I mean, they're trying to make her attractive and that's
yeah.
a tall order.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, because you're supposed to like, you know, want her to hook up with Mark Wahlberg, I guess.
I guess.
Anyways.
Well, Tim Burton wanted to hook up with her.
I do have to bring up Ape City because like when I was working at New Image at the time and one of the guys who was the runners was from the Bronx. His name is Chris Raffaelli. He's a filmmaker. He makes movies. Look him up. He's working in New York today, making independent films. So good on you, Chris, if you happen to be listening. But he had a real comical take on like fucking Ape City. Like it looks so fucking fake. Like he was just, he could not abide the Ape City in this. And I get it. It's pretty cheesy. I mean, it looks like a set.
It does, but I like it. I think it's cool. Like I've always wanted to like my entire like life as a kid or whatever. I wanted to live in Ape City like that, like just in all the trees and the way that it's just the kind of enshrouded. And yeah, so it's like Jim Henson. It's like the Dark Crystal or something like that, you know, but it's, yeah, it's definitely does not look like a real place, of course, but yeah,
like looks like Swift's Family Robinson
yes,
treehouse.
That's what I wanted yeah. to live in. That was like one of my favorite things when I go to Disney World is I wanted to go and spend time in the Swift's Family Robinson treehouse.
Yeah,
I really wanted to live in a tree.
Yeah,
I did have a treehouse, by the way.
I know you did.
Yeah, but not to this like degree. This was like, this is supreme treehouse living.
It doesn't bother me. I do agree that it looks very much like a set,
yeah,
and like something you'd go to in Disney World or whatever. But
I would go to that. If they had a Planet of the Apes ride with Ape City, Tim Burton's Ape City, I'd go and hang out there.
I think there's a lot of fun to be had with this movie if you can just get over like the fact that it's kind of bad. Like, I think it's actually a fun, bad movie, especially for like the first half. I think, unfortunately, the plot sort of ends up getting in the way, because who gives a shit about it? You know, like the plot is basically that Mark Wahlberg has to like find, he's got like this little device, a tracker device, and it's telling him that his ship is trying to find him.
Right.
So he's got to go out into like the wasteland or whatever, right, and find his ship. So, you know, they escape from the captivity from the Ape City. And they go off, you know, on their quest to find his ship. You know, in the meantime, like, Thade has discovered the pod in the swamp, and he's actually killed some apes because he doesn't want them to spread it around. That's what's going on. But, yeah, it just basically becomes this, like, thing where they're chasing after the humans and their ape allies as they go off into the desert. Kris Kristofferson gets killed by Thade, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the plot isn't that interesting. It's just like, all right, well, they're running out to the desert to find the thing, and the apes are chasing them, and some stuff happens.
It's way more fun in Ape City.
Yes.
Like, when we're going through, there's a scene at one point where I feel like, I think Mark Wahlberg's trying to like escape or something's going on. And they're like run through the bedroom with the rich gorilla. I can't remember who the actor is. You mentioned him earlier.
Glenn Shaddix.
Yes. And Lisa Marie. And yeah. They're like getting ready to get into some ape lovemaking.
Yeah.
They like both jump up and grab onto like the chandelier or something.
Well,
like,
before that, they're doing this weird like ape. She's doing like this weird ape dance on the bed
and moving around and doing a whole thing. But then when like they bust into the room, they all both are like, and, like, again, just like jump. There's so much jumping around in this. It's super fun.
You know, that's Tim Burton. Like, oh, we got to do the thing where they run through the apartment and the people are trying to just do their normal thing. Right, and it's crazy. I mean, it's such a Hollywood gag from like the 30s or whatever.
Raising Arizona does it really well.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of movies do it. It's a classic routine.
Right.
Heroes are being chased through somebody's apartment.
Right. Let's see what they're doing and how they're reacting.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's fun. Like, if you can just enjoy the ride of this, then you'll enjoy it.
That's how I feel, too. I mean, I feel like this movie has pleasures to give. Obviously, this isn't the direction to go in with the Planet of the Apes franchise. Like, but as a one and done, I think it's enjoyable. It's silly. It's got some cool action and makeup and stuff in it. And, you know, the plot is stupid.
And the twists are coming, because we're going to untwist all those twists.
Well, it also kind of tries to be like a big battle movie. Well,
it's like
end.
Game of Thronesy, like with, you know, the big, like, you know, the humans are going to try to overcome the apes by tricking them or confusing them, is the idea, is like, because they know they're outnumbered.
Well, yeah, and there's also the thing about the gun. We should mention that the Charlton Heston scene, his cameo, he's playing the dying father of Thade, as you mentioned already. Yeah. But the big, like, focal point of that scene is, you know, he's been hiding this piece of technology from the other apes that he found, like, in the wasteland or whatever. And he's like, it's over there in this, like, you know, gourd or whatever. Right. And Thade breaks it. And it's like a gun. And so it's like, oh, like, they had this technology. And of course, the irony being that Charlton Heston is like a gun advocate or whatever, the head of the NRA or whatever the hell he was
at
the time.
Definitely at that point.
I don't know. I kind of think there's a bit of cleverness there. But yeah, I mean, it basically ends up, you know, after some action scenes or whatnot, it ends up, they go out into the desert, and what they find there is the wreck of the space station, because they came after Mark Wahlberg. But the twist is they got trapped in the past, you know, whatever, thousands of years before, and the apes that they had to experiment on or put in pods are the apes that like broke out. And there was one ape in particular, Simos, who like led the other apes in some sort of rebellion. And that's how the apes ended up being what they are.
Twist number one.
Which is not a bad twist. No. And, you know, the ship they make to look like it's the Statue of Liberty.
Sticking out of the sand. And there's like spikes sticking out and everything. Yeah, that I didn't think that was a bad twist either. I was like, oh. Okay.
I mean, it's not like great, but it's not terrible.
No.
And I remember in the marketing and stuff in the trailers, they would just show shots. And so it made it look like it was going to be the same movie because you're like, oh, is that the Statue of Liberty? But like, no, it's the.
So it was clever.
It's the spaceship. So yeah, I don't mind that twist. But then it becomes this whole like, we've got to, you know, battle the apes. Like Mark Wahlberg turns back on the nuclear power that powers the ship because it lasts forever. And then, you know, uses it to like make a big like exhaust blast or whatever. So that when the apes come to attack, it's like a bomb going off. I mean, it's cool that we get this big kind of like Game of Thrones-y type of ape battle, but it's not that cool.
No.
There's cool things about it, like the apes come running.
Yeah.
And I remember watching some bonus features of how they did that. It's like people who are acrobats, like running on all fours. But what they do is they're pulling a like sheet underneath them, like along the ground, which makes it look like they're going way faster.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. They did a lot of cool practical things to pull off these effects. And I think they're impressive. You know, especially now with CG being able to do everything. I mean, there's CG in this movie too, but removing wires and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, I find it refreshing.
Well, and I would say that the, especially for this time, the CG could have been a lot worse. Like, yes. I appreciate that they leaned more into practical.
Yeah.
And use CG as they should instead of just leaning into CG and getting that look of this time with CG, which we both have thumbs down.
But to also to compliment the new movies, they're using CG great.
But there was a window of time that we've discussed that is like, there's a look of like, I would say...
Around this time.
That's what I'm saying. It was around this time until like mid-2000s, like before getting into the now new Planet of the Apes or whatever. Like there was a good stretch of late 90s, mid-2000s that was egregious with the CG. And we've beat this horse.
I agree. Yes. And this movie does not fall into that category.
So good on you, 2001 Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. The CG they use is like either for like the spaceship stuff or whatever, or to remove wires so that you don't see that the apes are being pulled on wires. And yeah, they do a little bit here and there, but it's really unnoticeable. So from a special effects standpoint for the time, I think this movie looks great.
I agree.
So again, more compliments. Where we will not compliment the movie is like, the plot is pretty stupid. Mark Wahlberg is like, I mean, at one point before this battle, Mark Wahlberg tries to do kind of like the Braveheart rallying speech. And that just is like,
it just falls flat.
He's like, this is what you've been waiting for, to stand up against the apes. It's like, you're an ape, Mark Wahlberg. I mean, could they have gotten a more ape-like lead?
No.
I mean, just slap some makeup on that guy. And
he could have been on the other's team.
Yeah.
I know. And, you know, we do love Mark Wahlberg.
Totally.
And I'll tell you what. We brought him home from Blast from the Past.
That's right. We have this figure.
We do have the figure. Leo Davidson. He's in our collection proudly.
Yeah.
Looks like he's disco dancing.
Yeah. His arm is extended straight up like
Travolta.
Travolta and Staying Alive. Don't know why.
Saturday Night Fever.
That's right. Yeah. Who knows why?
Who knows why? But all like I knew is he needed to come live with us. There's certain ways that he delivers lines in this movie that just remind me of like, because it wasn't too far off from Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, it's Dirk Diggler. He's still in Dirk Diggler mode.
He is pretty terrible as the lead. I mean, he's not terrible. He's doing what the movie needs him to do for the most part. He cannot be a rousing leader of a battle, but for the most part, he's just kind of running around looking tough, and that's all that's being required.
That's fine. That's all that's being asked of him.
He's making goo goo eyes at Helena Bonham Carter.
And Estella Warren.
And Estella Warren. I mean, she's a charisma vacuum as well.
Oh, bless
she's
her.
Doing nothing.
She's a beautiful girl, but
yeah.
Also a little Simeon-like.
Yeah, a little bit. So yeah, you know, we get a big battle here at the end, and that's when we get twist number two.
That's right.
And twist number two, you were starting to pick up on it because you're like,
wait a minute.
Is Thade Pericles? And I'm like, close.
Well, because I was like, we're messing with time now. Who knows?
The Pericles' pod arrives very conveniently, by the way. I mean, remember, it just disappeared.
Yes.
And now it's popping up right in the middle of this battle.
And this is how space works. This is how I have a NASA t-shirt on. I'm an expert.
It's Ansa in the original movie. Anyways, yeah, Pericles' pod just shows up magically at this moment and touches down. The apes all think that he's Simos returned. They
That's
think
right.
he's the return of their deity, Simos.
Yep.
And he gets out of the thing and Mark Wahlberg, like, takes him in his arms, and then Thade just kind of like fucks everything up by like running into the ship or whatever. At one point he like swats poor Pericles.
I was worried about poor Pericles. He went and knocked him off into this other room, and he just says knocked. He's just laying on the floor, and I'm like, Pericles wasn't ready for this.
Yeah, not at all.
No, this wasn't what it was like where he's been.
And we get this sort of fight in the inside the ruins of the old ship,
which I appreciate the way that that wraps up, because we had established earlier that because it's the ship that Mark Wahlberg had been on previously,
yeah.
that his hand still controls everything.
Yeah.
So he gets Thade over into this area and opens it up, and then, or it's open, and then he puts his hand on it and closes him in, and that's when Thade has the gun.
Yes, Thade gets the gun because Mark Wahlberg gets a gun out of the kit that
that's
was
right.
with Pericles.
That's right.
But they fight, and eventually Thade gets the gun from him, and he's got the gun in his hand.
What happened to the gun from his dad?
It was like all calcified.
Okay, so he's just saying like, this is what a gun is. This is technology,
yeah.
just kind of showing him what it is.
It's a little fuzzy because it's a gun from the ship.
Right.
Like that's where it came from.
Yeah.
It's like an old gun from the ship.
Right.
It would be more effective if it was like an old like revolver or something.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But that didn't make sense. Not that this movie makes any fucking sense, but like that wouldn't have made any sense because this is not Earth. This is not the same twist. And that's what was kind of confusing, I felt, when I first saw this movie, because I was kind of like, well, is that a gun from Earth? Oh, no, wait, you learn that the ship crashed. And so all the technology came from that ship, from Mark Wahlberg's ship, and they had guns or whatever on that ship. So that's what that gun is, but it just doesn't work anymore.
Right. Okay. There's a struggle. The gun slides on the ground, and we see General Thade just like, and he like is looking at it, and he gets it, and he's sniffing it and kind of rolling it around. And then he gets the idea of how it's supposed to be used.
Yeah.
You see him putting that together. Thankfully, that's when Mark Wahlberg is able to lock him in to that area of the ship with the bulletproof glass.
Yeah.
So he's just in there going nuts, shooting bullets that are just ricocheting around all over the place.
Yeah.
And that's just going to leave him there.
I appreciate Thade's moments of just spazzing
yeah.
out in like simian rage.
Oh yeah. Flipping around. And
yeah. At one point he learns from his, Major Domo, Michael Clark Duncan, that they've lost the human. And so he flips out and just goes on a complete, like, crazy
yeah.
jumping around the ape city or whatever. But then he's like, it's okay, I don't blame you, my friend, which is an interesting thing. You think he's going to, like, rip Michael Clark Duncan apart or whatever, but no, he forgives him.
Yeah.
Usually villains kill their henchmen.
Right, but we end up at around this point too, though, is when Michael Clark Duncan is like, I can't get down with this anymore.
He hit Pericles.
That's right. Oh, that's what it was.
Yes,
yeah.
Because Michael Clark Duncan thought Pericles was Simos.
Yeah.
Come back, and Thade showed him no respect and
yeah.
just almost killed him.
Yeah.
So that's why he turns. All of this works for me.
Yeah.
Like up to this point, like I don't think it's the greatest movie in the world.
No.
Don't get me wrong. But like, for all the shit this movie gets from people, like up until here, I think it's forgivable. I mean, you know, Pericles coming out of the sky at just this moment is pretty convenient. That's quite a convenient thing to have to buy into, but let's just say that you're okay with it. The problem then comes after this, because, okay, Thade has been defeated, right? He's in this cage, and keep this in mind, all right? Keep this in your head, okay? Because we're going to have to talk this through. You're not getting out of here without talking this through. So Mark Wahlberg says his goodbyes, kisses Helena Bonham Carter.
Gives her Pericles.
Gives her to Pericles to take care of. Goes to Estella Warren, and she's like, can't you stay? And he's like, no, I gotta go, baby, or whatever.
Yeah, he's like, I need to go home.
I need to go home.
Because we get a at the beginning, we do get like in the vein of... For All Mankind or whatever, we get like a video chat where it's like all his friends on Earth are like, hey, come back soon or whatever.
Yeah, but that's not reason enough for him to want to go back. He's like
know.
Shitty friends. They're like, we're getting married.
I don't know. I'm just saying that's what we're supposed to go on here.
Why didn't they just give him like somebody at home, like a wife or something?
I don't know.
That's just such flimsy motivation. I mean, I get it. Maybe he really loves his bros, but like, you know, really? You got two babes to choose from here? If you want to get kinky, you can go off with Helena Bonham Carter. If not, you can have Estella Warren. What is he so anxious to get home to? Anyways, that's what he's doing.
It's the same thing that happens to Ash in Army of Darkness. It's like, I could have stayed. I could have been king.
But he's got a career at S-Mart to get back to.
He's got to get back to S-Mart.
You don't just leave that behind. So he gets in the pod, which, I mean, okay, this thing's going to fly him all the way back to Earth. I mean, just the absurdities mount here to a degree that is very, very hard to get past. I'm just going to get back in this thing, go into that cloud again.
That's right.
Right? It's going to take me back to Earth.
That's right.
Which it does. It takes him back to, like, the furthest reaches of our solar system. He's like going past like Saturn and shit.
That's right.
Just in this pod, but it's just like, nope, it's cruising, cruising right along. Don't worry about light years and all that kind of stuff. We've been watching For All Mankind, and it like what takes several weeks
months
to get to
or something like that.
Mars.
Yeah.
And that's relatively close.
Yeah.
But no, he just cruises right on by Saturn and then he's approaching Earth and he's getting like, you know, stuff on the radio, like, you know, you're entering our atmosphere.
Right.
You need to get your clearance or whatever.
Right.
Like
illegal aircraft, all this stuff. Yeah.
Right. Like he's getting like aircraft controller stuff or whatever. And then he crashes his pod into the water.
Oh, that's right. That's by the Washington Monument.
Yeah. It's like the reflecting pool or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
He crashes into that right at the Washington Monument.
Yep.
Gets out. Goes up the stairs at the Lincoln Memorial.
Get ready for twist number three. And this was when I started going, I think I know what's happening here.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've seen it once, you never forget it.
No.
Because he gets up the top of the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and is greeted by the image of Abraham Lincoln.
That's right. You heard him right. Abraham.
It is the statue of Abraham Lincoln, only instead of Lincoln's head on it, it is the head of Thade. And if you look behind, it like reads like Thade, the great emancipator.
That's right.
Think about this for a second. I challenge you.
Okay.
Thade somehow got out of that cage in the planet of the apes and got to Earth before Mark Wahlberg and took over the planet
and emancipated everyone.
And now all the apes are in charge and are literally like driving police cars and everything. Like they don't have newly designed cars that are more ergonomic for apes.
Nope.
They're just wearing what normal cops would wear.
That's right.
And they just put a new head on the Abraham Lincoln statue. I mean, was Abraham Lincoln really a person in this reality?
No, it's always been Thade.
But he just dressed like Lincoln?
He did when he was emancipating apes, he did.
So instead of the Civil War, I want to see this movie.
That's the Civil War. I don't want to see Alex Garland's Civil War. Yeah. This is the Civil War for us.
I want to see the Thade movie where we go and see how he emancipated the apes.
47 years ago.
In America in the 1800s? Like, were there enough apes at the time in America to do this? I mean, there's so many questions. It just baffles the mind trying to rationalize how things could have ended up in this place.
But yet at the same time, I'm just applauding that they went there with like zero logic.
Zero fucks given to making this make sense.
This is what we're going to do. And I'm just like.
Well, and you know what? That's exactly why it is the way it is, because I listened to the director's commentary. And I mean, Tim Burton director's commentaries are like nonsense. I mean, he doesn't have any clue as to why he does what he does. Like, he never like has any sort of thoughtful, like psychological evaluation. He's just like, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of cool. Like, it's all he is. He doesn't think deeply about these things at all, as if you can't tell. And yeah, he's just like, no, I just thought it would be funny if he, like, you know, he crashed down in the Washington and it's like an ape Lincoln. And that's it. That's all the thought he put into it. He just thought it would be funny.
I say bless you, Tim Burton.
So, yes, this was the thing that people walked out of the theater seeing in 2001 and were like, what the fuck was that? No more of that, please. And yeah, it was so disliked just across the board that they didn't ever make a sequel.
Even though they made buku bucks.
Yep. They were like, nope, no more. We're not going to chase this rabbit any further, this monkey any further.
Nope.
So, yeah.
Why did we think it failed?
Because of this ending. Because it's not really a good movie, ultimately, and this ending is catastrophically bad. Yeah. That's why it failed. But I would say that if A, you enjoy a fun, bad movie, and B, you like really cool makeup jobs and you want to actually see some actually decent performances from character actors and makeup, I say give this another shot.
And I would go a step further and say make it a double feature with the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh yes, that's a very good bad movie double feature.
And what have I done by saying that? I've made that happen at our house.
That's right, it can happen here.
It can happen anytime. It
could happen right now.
Right now.
To hell with going to sleep. Let's throw on Island of Dr. Moreau.
What have I done? What have I done?
Do you have any last words to say about the 2001 Planet of the Apes?
I don't hate it as much as the rest of the world. I can just say that. I think there's some good things there. And I don't even hate this, like, janky-ass weird ending. I'm like, I just love it.
I think this is Stockholm Syndrome from being my husband for 10 years.
For being your husband?
I mean, yeah. All right, well, I'm going to go chase my chimpanzee into a space storm and crash land on an ape planet and emancipate the apes and become Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. I'll be your Mary Todd.
That about does it today for Tentpole Trauma. If you like what you heard, check out our social media presence on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look for Tentpole Trauma. That was easy, wasn't it? If you like us, hit subscribe and leave us a sterling review on iTunes, if you dare. If you really like us, head over to patreon.com and get involved in one of our fabulous tiers. You'll be glad you did. Want to communicate with Tentpole Trauma? Send an email to tentpoletrauma@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And who knows, one day you may even get your email read on one of our shows. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.